Good afternoon and welcome to today's Innovative Ideas podcast. My name is Paul Howard, and I'm the director and senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute's Center for Medical Progress. Our guest this afternoon is U.S. Representative Paul Ryan, now in his seventh term representing Wisconsin residents in the state's 1st congressional district. Representative Ryan is also chairman of the House Budget Committee, where he works to bring fiscal discipline and accountability to the federal government, and he is also a senior member of the House Ways and Means Committee, which has jurisdiction over tax policy, Social Security, healthcare, and trade laws. Chairman Ryan is also the author of a specific plan to address the U.S.'s looming budget crisis driven by exploding levels of entitlement spending. The plan, The Path to Prosperity, is available on his congressional website. Chairman Ryan, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, you bet. Nice to be with you, Paul.
In your September speech at the Hoover Institution, which is terrific, it's called The Optimist Guide to Repeal and Replace, which we'll link to on our website, I think you really hit the nail on the head in terms of articulating the source of our current healthcare woes. You say, quote, "At its core, the healthcare problem is one of inflation, driven by the overutilization of services, dramatic underpayments, and massive inefficiency. If you look closely, the reason is easy to see. The healthcare cost sector lacks most of the basic building blocks of a functioning market." I think that's a terrific way of framing the problem. And one of the things you really center on in your talk is the absence of prices in healthcare.
Right.
Payers in today's system, there are government programs, they're insurers. Consumers have just no idea what the prices are and no incentive to demand that providers any more efficient. So given these massive inefficiencies, lack of productivity gains in the system, if we shift to the kind of defined contribution system that you favor, how do you think the system would respond to those kinds of changes?
Well, it basically re-injects those core principles that make markets work into the healthcare sector. And where this debate usually goes is a lot of folks will just say, well, healthcare is different. It can't function like a marketplace. No, baloney. First of all, I'm sitting at my desk. I can see my computer extremely well, and it's because I got LASIK surgery in 2000. Back then, it cost me about $4,000. Now, you can get it done for $1,500, and they've revolutionized this excimer laser three times since then, and it's an even better procedure. So there's an example of an out-of-pocket cost procedure. You pay out-of-pocket for it, where the price has gone down, the quality has gone up, in a relatively sophisticated, you know, healthcare procedure. So what I'm simply saying is we haven't tried putting market principles into healthcare because we have this third-party payment system where either the government or an insurance company sees the prices, negotiates the prices, pays the bills, and denies the consumer the ability to actually negotiate and see with the producer on price and quality. And so what happens is our labor force, you know, in healthcare, they are competing for not consumers to buy their product at a better value. They're basically chasing reimbursements. They're chasing process. It's a fee-for-service kind of a system where, in order to get their income going, they basically are chasing government price formulas or formulas that hinge off the government. And so they're not actually competing based on quality, based on price, which is value, for the patient's business. And if they actually have that kind of pressure, that kind of consumer pressure put to bear on them, then they'll compete against each other, insurers, hospitals, doctors, producers, for that beneficiary's business. And like everywhere else in every other sector of our economy, that kind of transparent price discovery, that kind of transparency on quality will drive innovation and increasing productivity, which will help tame the root cause of health inflation that we have, which is a big contributor to our entitlement explosion.
And just to follow up on that point, I think it's a terrific point. The government has responded by, you know, creating all these Byzantine formulas to try and control costs. Obviously,
that's
they fail because you say the providers are just chasing reimbursements. It's fragmented. It's expensive. Quality is often very inconsistent. So it's price controls and yet more price controls. The latest incarnation is this, Medicare's Independent Payment Advisory Board, created by the Affordable Care Act, which tries to just cap Medicare growth. But then it also exempts a bunch of players, hospitals, other providers from that cap for the next 5 years, leaving it to fall on physicians, pharmaceutical companies, medical device manufacturers. And these cuts have to fall every year, which makes it extraordinarily difficult to try and do the things I think you'd want to see, which is let's pay for prevention, let's focus on quality over the long term, not just what's the budget number we have
hit
this year. How do we get away from this mentality of price controls, formulas, and get the system to focus on what you want, prevention and quality?
You know what's disturbing about that fact is we've had a recent experiment with this, which was the 1997 Medicare deal. And what we learned from that, which was an agreement with House Republicans and President Clinton, was that price controls don't work. And what was happening were providers are just going out of business because of the price controls. They're just denying, you know, skilled nursing facilities were leaving the marketplace, weren't taking Medicare. Those kinds of things were happening. Our lesson was price controls don't work. What the Democrats, I think, got out of that was not that they don't work, that they're just politically unsustainable. And so instead of learning a different lesson, consumer-based healthcare, patient-centered medicine, where the patient's the nucleus of the healthcare system, they decided to delegate all this power and authority to this unelected panel of bureaucrats who can sort of unilaterally put in place these price controls. And what you just described is that it's going to be that sector of the healthcare delivery system that gets hit first, where they twist the screws to bring down prices, and then the rest of healthcare will get hit in about 5 years to hit these arbitrary targets. That just simply means one of two things is going to happen. Providers will just chase reimbursements by trying to move volume faster, moving people through the system faster, or they'll just stop taking Medicare in total. Rick Foster, the chief actuary at CMS, the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services, came and testified to the Budget Committee earlier this year and told us that by the end of the decade, Medicare providers will be reimbursed at rates at or below Medicaid. And what's going to happen is they'll just stop taking Medicare patients. So you'll have a massive scarcity of services because of these price controls that are going to be imposed by the IPAB. So the system just won't be able to sustain that self. And what it will do, it will fuel health inflation among the private sector as well. And so we know from recent experience that this doesn't work. This is why we want to get rid of that and get back toward not a third-party payment system, but a payment system where the money flows through the individual into the marketplace, and then the providers compete against each other for our business versus coming through the government and flowing through to the provider network with all of these arbitrary price controls that are agnostic on price and quality.
Absolutely. So every other sector of the U.S. economy, even if you look at the smartphone you're probably holding in your hand or in your pocket, consumers are fierce competition. New features evolve all the time. Quality goes up. And yet now commercial carriers give away these phones
to try and get service.
So you have this enormous focus on quality competition in places where the signals are actually allowed to operate in a market kind of way. Looking ahead, it looks pretty dismal. I think even President Obama said a couple of months ago, look, we've got three programs, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid. By 2030, those three programs are going to eat up all federal revenues, period, end of sentence.
That's right.
So to paraphrase the economist Herbert Stein, if something can't go on forever, it won't, either in the U.S. or we're seeing this in Europe too. How do we get to this point? Because there are lots of people get to the point of real reform, more market-oriented reforms. Because as you point out, there are a lot of people in the status quo today, the companies, the hospitals, who've got a deep commitment to these formulas.
Oh, they sure do.
However flawed they are, because at least they're making money, and I guess they know the devil today, and they might prefer that to the devil they don't know. How do you get a political consensus to get to the kind of reforms that you're proposing?
First, with respect to the providers, what I try to communicate to them is you're just going to be fighting over more scarcity. This is going to be shared scarcity. And you're going to go to Washington to try and lobby so that your competitor or somebody else in a different part of the healthcare sector gets hit before you do. You know, in an IPAB price control based system, you're just basically trying to pay your hostage takers to shoot you last. And that simply won't work. And so I think providers are beginning to realize this. They're beginning to realize that these hardcore price controls, number one, don't pay them, you know, based on quality, that even if they innovate, even if they work hard, even if they increase productivity, they're paid the same as anybody else who doesn't do that. And so they feel cheated for that. They don't feel like they're being rewarded like the market would reward them if they're good, number one. Number two, I think they're beginning to realize that they would fare so much better under a market-based system where they are free to compete and innovate and reap the benefits from that. And so I think they're beginning to wake up that the status quo third-party payment system, which they've been successful at sort of rigging and lobbying and keeping afloat, is not going to be there because of the massive unfunded liabilities, the huge fiscal pressures that are coming, and the new sort of bureaucratized system in controlling that, which literally takes elected officials out of the equation. And so they see that writing on the wall. And so I think they're far more willing to accept the premise of consumer-based healthcare, of patient-centered healthcare. And I think that that's the opportunity we have. Pushing these ideas before Obamacare was challenging. It was difficult because the status quo at the time was, you know, acceptable to a lot of people. Now, within the context of the president's healthcare law, the new rationing board IPAB being put into place, and just the dire fiscal condition of these programs, I think their minds are more willing and open toward a consumer-directed, patient-centered system where they are more in control of their own fate based upon their quality, based upon their productivity, than the arbitrary whim of some, you know, bureaucrat pushing the screws in our new pricing formula in Washington.
So they're realizing finally the only way they
can. I spend every week I talk to provider groups that come here to Washington, and I see light bulbs going off in heads, which is, I think we're better off, you know, working with these Republicans on this patient-centered system than trying to come to Washington to get them to try and price control us last.
For every couple of years, go back.
Every couple of years, because IPAB hits every year. I mean, the way the formula works is it's a global cap on Medicare. Medicare grows at between 6 and 7% a year. This cap drops it to GDP plus 1. The president's only idea for fiscal consolidation is to knock that another half a point to GDP plus 0.5. So let's say it's 3%. So they're going to cut the growth rate in half on Medicare, and this board will determine out of whose hide it comes from. And they know the demographics of the baby boomers. They know the pressure of health inflation. And they know sooner or later it's going to come to them, and they're not going to be able to sustain themselves. They know the system will collapse under its own weight under the current path we are on. They get that. They understand that. And so I think that they're far more willing to accept those of the views that we've had for a number of years now in the context of the future they have in front of them today.
Chairman Ryan, last question. Yesterday, the U.S. Supreme Court agreed to take a series of cases that's going to examine the constitutionality of the Affordable Care Act. Do you have any feeling about what we should be looking for from the court, what you'll be looking for from the court, and where you think this issue is going to play out over the next 9 to 12 months?
I'm excited about this, number one. Number two, the ruling we think is going to come down around June of the election year, which means we're going to have a big conversation about the big driver of our debt, healthcare, and what to do about it. That's a good thing. So I think we're going to have the right issue, along with debt and deficits in the economy, front and center in the campaign. So that timing is very good. Number two, you know, I'm not a lawyer or an astute court observer, but those who are think this sort of hinges on Kennedy. To me, it would be hard to see them not knock down the individual mandate. If the Commerce Clause can be interpreted as allowing this, then there's really no limit to what government can do. The question is of severability. Does just the mandate go down, or does the whole bill go down with it? And that's one that, you know, I just don't know. We'll have to wait and see.
Well, that's a terrific point to end on, but I think a very hopeful, optimistic on the whole, a view of where the healthcare market's going, or rather that we might actually get to a point where we've got a healthcare market one of these days. Chairman Ryan, thanks very much for your time.
My pleasure. Thanks, Paul.
Take care.